I wanted to give you a little bit of background since I'm sort of new at Normal. I was the administrative assistant for almost 2 years before I was promoted to this position. And before that, I graduated from the George Washington University with a degree in African American History and Africana Studies. And after I graduated, I actually went on to teach third grade for a little while in the South Bronx and Southeast DC. And I'll tell you a quick story. I had a third grader out at recess got caught with a bag of marijuana. And the principal brought him back into my classroom and said, all right, we have to get the paperwork going. James has to be expelled. I said, wait a second. This kid has no idea what he has. He has a bag of what looks like oregano, and all he knows about it is that his older cousin uses it and says it's cool. And he wanted to come in and show his friends. Well, I know James, and I know James' mother. And I know that since James got expelled from PR, I really fear for James's future. I mean, he's out of school. He's 9 years old because he brought a bag of marijuana into school and he didn't know what it was. But Washington, D.C. has a zero drug policy in all of their schools. So that was before I came to Normal as one of my experiences. So to move on a little bit, I wanted to introduce, before we get to the panel, I just wanted to briefly explain that I had attempted to start a D.C. Normal chapter, which hadn't existed for a while, back in the summer. And the nice thing about being here and being able to come up before you guys is I can tell you some things exactly what not to do. It was so sad. Our chapter failed miserably, but it was great because I learned exactly what not to do. And next time I go around to give it a new go, I think it'll be a little bit better. So I just wanted to throw out from my perspective three goals, three ideas, what not to do, what to do from my own experience, and then we'll get to the real veteran chapter leaders who can give some great stories and amazing experiences for you. First and most important thing I learned, set goals. Set goals that are achievable. Okay, everybody that came to DC Normal meetings wanted medical marijuana in the district. Well, unfortunately, in DC, we have no voting rights, and Bob Barr decided that he was going to pass an amendment saying that absolutely no drug provisions could be passed in the district, and there's nothing we can do about that unless we get a congressman to overturn that amendment for us. So obviously that couldn't be one of our goals, and people had a hard time understanding that. Set goals that are achievable and measurable. So you know where you are and you know where you're going. You can look back and reflect on what you did, what went right and what didn't. Got to know where you're going, what your mission is. The second is choose people to work with you who share the same mission. A lot of people are really into this issue and they want to get into activism, but our idea for the mission, my friend and I, was, okay, we're in Washington, D.C., right? 70% African American. We got to reach out to the black community, and this should be a black-run chapter. It's in Washington, D.C. Well, then all of the, you know, first people that came to our meetings, they didn't like the idea of going to Canvas in Southeast D.C., what they call the scary neighborhoods. So choose people who share your mission. Otherwise, it's going to fall apart like it did for me. And slow down. Slow down, especially when you get out of college. If you want to start a chapter, regional or city, you're going to need 6 months to a year. In my opinion, people may have other suggestions, to really get things together and solidified, because people are going to say, all right, what are we going to do now? When's our first rally? When are we going to pass this resolution? Let's go, let's go, let's go. And it's so hard to explain to your members, we're here to legalize marijuana, but now we have to do, we have to make like this list and the checkup. It's just, everyone's really excited and they want to get this done so quickly, but it's really hard and it takes a lot of organization, almost anal retentive organization. So slow down and pace yourselves. Set your goals. Reflect on your goals 6 months, 12 months, and make them measurable. That would be my suggestions for you guys. But then again, I'm only 25, and everybody up here has a lot more experience and a lot better advice for you. So I'd like to introduce our first speaker. Mr. Tim Beck is a 1974 graduate of the University of Detroit, where he served as student body president and received a bachelor's degree in political science. Upon graduation, he was employed as a staff assistant to a member of the Michigan legislature. In 1975, he entered the insurance business, and after a variety of sales and management positions, he founded his own company, Michigan Benefit Providers, Inc. In 1988, specializing in the sales and service of corporate employee benefit programs. He was a candidate for the Michigan House of Representatives and received the Republican Party nomination for Wayne County Sheriff in 2000. He was elected Executive Director of Michigan Normal in 2005. And today, his full-time political focus is on marijuana reform. Big round of applause, please, for Tim Beck.
I thank you. Thank all of you for being here. I want to – the thing that – and there's, well, a couple things that about this idea of setting goals. It really, really is important, because if you don't do that, what happens, sometimes your group can self-destruct. You'll have infighting and, you know, that kind of thing going on, or it'll be – and there's nothing wrong with, you know, having a club where people, you know, get together and smoke bud and, you know, talk politics and that kind of thing. I mean, it's better than a lot of other things you could be doing. But if you're going to be, you know, really highly effective, or at least more effective, the idea is reaching out, you know, to the community. And there's a lot of different ways you can do that. Some of our chapters, we've got we've got probably about 10 county chapters in Michigan. I would say about 200 members of Michigan Normal that pay dues. And we guarantee them certain things. We have like a newsletter, you know, that comes out, and it has to, people have to perform. The newsletter must go out, period. And it's done, you know, 3 times a year. And that way people that aren't on the Internet, we have a lot of folks that aren't on, you know, on the Internet that depend on mail, you know, and so on. And they really like to get that. And then they continue to renew their dues. And so what we did, we set goals. We have experience with ballot initiatives, you know, in Michigan. We've done 4 successful ballot initiatives. And what we're trying to do is train provide education for activists, people that really want to, like I say, do something. And, again, something for everybody. We have people that vend, you know, T-shirts and paraphernalia, you know, and that kind of thing at, you know, fairs and things like that. We have others that are willing to go door to door, you know, and hand out, you know, political literature in a blitz of an entire city, you know, at one time. And another thing that you'll find that you're going to have of your group, usually you're going to have 20% of the people doing 80% of the work. Got to figure that. It's pretty much of a truism. And that's normal, too. And, again, I was in, you know, the Republican Party and corporate management, and, you know, you'll find that same phenomena in any group, not just normal. but it's helpful if you understand that. You know, let's put it that way. It's less frustrating. And, you know, there's a kind of a cliche that if you want to get something done, give it to a busy person. So, you gotta like it. You gotta like it. That's one of the things why I'm in it. I have so much fun, just doing things like this, and then, you know, getting things done like ballot initiatives passed. It's a mental challenge. It's really a high, you know, to be on TV and stuff like that. I mean, you may get a chance someday, you know, to do that in the radio and that kind of thing, and that it will happen. And again, I can't think of much else, you know, to say. Thank you all, and I'll take questions as appropriate at the right time. So thank you. Thank you.
So Tim will be around all weekend. I highly suggest if you get the chance, you get to talk to him, because, again, this is a white Republican activist in Detroit. That's pretty amazing unto itself. So I'd like to introduce our next speaker, and this is an incredible woman that I am in so much awe of just because of her circumstances. She's from Oklahoma. Norman, Oklahoma. Norma. Normal. Right. That was tough. But all right, I'll get right into your bio, and I'll let Norma speak, because she's got some great things to tell you, particularly her work in the state legislature, I think, is impressive. So Norma Sapp is from Normal, from Norman, Oklahoma. Thank you for making me say that. She is the director of Oklahoma Normal, owns and operates a small farm with organic beef and vegetables. She has been a member of Normal since 1990. Norma is a citizen lobbyist for drug law reform in the Oklahoma legislature, an inspector for the Oklahoma Election Board since 1988. In 2005, she traveled across the United States with Howard Woolridge of LEAP, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, raising awareness and the need for drug law reform. So I'm very excited to have with us today Ms. Norma Sapp.
Thank you. Do you mind if I sit right here and do it? Yes, Oklahoma. If you're new to the reform movement,
I don't know if you know, but Oklahoma has a reputation. And our number one cash crop is pot. Figure it. High Times actually said it best. Last year when I was on that trip, I had taken a bunch of High Times I hadn't gotten around to reading, and they had a how to travel with your stash suggestions. And the last one was do not travel through Oklahoma. Jack Herer, if anybody knows who that is, he has family there. He won't come to Oklahoma. People ask me why I stay there, and I guess it's because there's nobody else doing what I do, so somebody's got to do it. We are number one in incarceration of women in the world. We're number three in incarceration of men per 100,000. And it is a tough state. Most people, when they call me, you know, they've traveled through Oklahoma and they've gotten stopped. It's kind of like the Gestapo on either end of the state, north, south, east, and west. If you have an out-of-state tag, you're going to get stopped. Bring plenty of money. You can get out of it if you have plenty of money. My suggestion is don't travel through Oklahoma with pot. Just call me when you get there. because I'm in this state and because the fear is high, it's hard to get people to become activists. It's hard to get people to even talk to their mother about marijuana. And, you know, actually, that's what I was going to talk to you guys about today, was a kind of a motherly thing. When I first was asked to be on this panel, I said, I know what I need to tell them. I need to tell them to don't wear pink hair and nose ring if you're trying to be an activist. But, you know, your mother can tell you that. I've had to conform, though. When I started doing this, I wore jeans to the Capitol because I'd get through cleaning the stalls and throwing the hay, and I had my boots on. So that's the way I wanted to go. That's who I am. But one day, I was trying to get a senator to come out and speak to me, and I'd waited like at least 10 or 15 minutes, and this young lady came along, and she had on a very short skirt and high heels, and he came right out. So since then, I've conformed my dress. And you know, really, that's my secret to what I do. I've conformed. I've infiltrated, I guess you could say. I join everything that I can, not related to the drug war, but also groups like the Women's League of Women Voters. You can work within them. You can work within the Democratic Party. You can work within your church. If you don't have a church, find one that, you know, fits you, and go to their Sunday school and volunteer. I have, for the last 8 years, put together a what we call the trash off in my community. And twice a year, for 3 days, we pick up trash and get rid of all the tires on the sides of the roads and take it off and take it to the landfill. Well, I'm the major person who puts that together. And I have to be involved with the county commissioner, the Chamber of Commerce, the local American Legion, and all the groups that want to get together, the school groups and everything. So I have developed credibility in this area with all of the citizens. I've also worked for the election board since 1988, as Karen mentioned. And so I've got to meet a lot of people within my city government, Norman City. When I first began to be in activism, I actually wrote a letter to all the police officers, all the judges, the county commissioners, everybody in my city government, the mayor, and invited them to the Hemp Fest. And nobody showed up. We held a few more. They still didn't show up. But I invited them, so I alerted them that I was going to be in this business. You know, I was going to be trying to change the law. And I've made so many friends. I think if I did get arrested, my sheriff would be there and not let me get thrown in the pen because he likes me. And, you know, really, that's the secret. Even if you have pink hair and a nose ring, they make them like you. Volunteer to help them, to do the nasty jobs that nobody else wants to do. Volunteer for everything you can. And I don't mean that just to be covert. It really brings goodness to your heart if you can help somebody. Volunteer at the local shelter, at the women's shelter, and hand out food. Volunteer to take sick people, the old people, to their doctor appointments. You know, there's all kinds of places you can volunteer. And when you develop that credibility, then they're going to listen to you. And, you know, there's not one place that I have sat down next to a person, not on the airplane, not on the buses, in the courthouses, that you can't talk about drug law. You can somehow get that conversation over to drug law. So there you go. And you know what? Even in Oklahoma, I don't find anybody that disagrees with me. So why we're still in the dark ages, I don't know. Because, I mean, on the way here, I found people that were from Norman, Oklahoma, when I rode the bus over here from the airport, on the airplane. And these people says, I don't know why they haven't changed the law in Oklahoma. There's a big giant they out there, you know, and it's actually us, and we have to do it. And whenever anybody says they, I always ask them who they is, because they do. They think there's a giant they out there, and they don't realize those are the theys. They are the person who has to pick up the telephone or write that letter. And so you have to talk them into doing that. And you have to first talk to your mother. You know, your mom and your dad are the ones that you can practice on. If you can convince them, then you can convince their friends at their social club. You can convince them at the church Sunday school class. If you can practice on your parents, you can get it done with everybody else. So anyway, that's the way I do it. Since I don't have a legion of people behind me, I have probably about 100 people on an email list that I can utilize. If I've got a bill going at the legislature, that I can call them and say, you know, make your phone calls today. We've got to get phone calls to such and such representative or such and such senator on a bill. And then so it's a phone tree type thing. But I can hardly ever get them out of the house to meet me at the Capitol. So I just go with that. I do what I can do. And basically in the legislature, all I have gotten done is kill bad bills. And you know, that's something. I'm glad to say that I've killed those bad bills. I got one amendment one time. That's my claim to fame. I think it was 1996. We got an amendment in a bill that the police wanted, and so I knew it was going to pass. And it was about forfeiture. I had lobbied all day long asking all the House members if they would like it if somebody snuck on the back of their land and planted some marijuana and we took their land, would they like it? But they didn't want to come off of their stand on forfeiture. So I finally found one legislator who was brave enough to put the amendment in there, and everybody on the floor knew they wanted that bill passed and they had to swallow the pill with it and put that in there. So from then on, we had a legal excuse to say I didn't know anything about that plants that are growing on the back of my 80 acres, and it could have been somebody else that planted it. And so from then on, they stopped doing forfeiture of land. They will take your car and all of your money if you come to Oklahoma with pot in your pocket. But land, and if you have they have an exemption. If you filed that homesteader exemption on your land, they will not touch it. So that's my claim to fame for that. But anyway, killing bad bills is a good thing, and so learn the system. Most states now have online legislative updates, so find out what your site is, you know, the address to it. Get on there and learn your way around it. Learn when the committee meets and maybe show up to those committees. There's other issues that are kind of peripheral around drug issues. You can be helpful in other matters, too. For instance, year before last, I helped the smoke shops in my state. They were trying to outlaw pipes that they're called hidden pipes because they evidently found a young person at school with a pen that looked, I mean, it was a pen that was actually a pipe. And so they were going to outlaw all of those. But in the language of the bill, they were going to outlaw quite a bit of the inventory of these tobacco shops. So I got a coalition of tobacco shops together, and they actually made the phone calls and came to the Capitol, and we rewrote that bill and actually made the law better. So you can get those coalitions together for other issues. See, this was an economic issue in many small towns. It's the tobacco store, you know. And so, and also the tattooing bill. I don't know if anybody knows this, but Oklahoma is the only state in the union that has no tattooing. It's illegal. So I joined that coalition of tattooing groups that wanted to change the law, and I helped them organize. I taught them how to do it. So they, guess what, passed it through the Senate, and yesterday or day before, passed it through the House. And so, yeah. So don't only be in the drug issue business. Help other people with their issues as well, and volunteer for everything. And like I said, if you come to Oklahoma, just call me. Don't bring your pot with you.
Could be here today. I knew she was going to have some interesting things to tell us. I'd like to next introduce Gary Stork, someone probably many of you recognize. He's been around for a very long time. He's an incredible activist. Again, a state you may not expect, particularly if many of you are from California. Gary's from Wisconsin. Let's see here. Gary Stork is a longtime Wisconsin medical cannabis patient, activist, and writer. A Wisconsin native, Gary first became active in the late 1970s, lobbying in Wisconsin's first medical marijuana law passed in 1982. After a dozen years in California, Gary returned to Wisconsin in 1995, settling in Madison. In 97, recovering from heart surgery, Gary met fellow Wisconsin patient and activist Jackie Rickert, who had led a 210-mile wheelchair journey for justice from Mondovi. Is that how you say it? Yeah. Mondovi? Okay. Mondovi to Madison. In 1999, Gary and Jackie joined Jim and Cheryl Miller in Washington, D.C. for a protest and then, Congressman Bob Barr's office, beginning a close working relationship, also known as the Commando Squad. In 2000, Jackie and Gary formed Is My Medicine Legal Yet?, a Wisconsin-based medical cannabis patient support group. In 2001, Gary was one of a number of co-founders of a reconstituted Wisconsin Normal. In 2003, after the passing of Cheryl Miller, Gary assisted Jim Miller, Jackie, Normal, and other groups in staging the Cheryl Miller Memorial Project in Washington, D.C., featuring a candlelight vigil at the U.S. Supreme Court. In 2004, Gary was co-founder of a reconstituted Madison Normal. A prolific writer, Gary has had over 240 letters and columns published. I can tell you, I check the Normal News through Google and Yahoo, and his name's coming up in it all the time. And let's see, at 2005 Normal Conference, Gary and Jackie were co-recipients of Normal's Peter McWilliams Award for Outstanding Achievement in Advocating the Cause of Medical Marijuana Access to a Safe, Effective Medicine and Equity Under the Law. A big round of applause, please, for Mr. Gary Stork.
Thank you, Karen. We've got a different situation in Madison, of course, than in Detroit and Oklahoma. In Madison, actually, liberal cannabis laws are conservative. We got the law passed back in 1977. Back in 76, they collected the signatures to put Ordinance 2320 on the ballot. And what that does is it legalizes medical use with the order of a practitioner, and it also legalizes the personal possession of a quarter pound of pot and an ounce of hash within your house. So that was passed by voters in 1977 in April, so it's been on the books now for 29 years. So one of the missions that we've been doing since we founded Madison Normal again back in 2004 was to try and fight, you know, marijuana is conservative in Madison. We want to keep things the way they are. We want to keep 2320 recognized. So we've done our best to keep it pointed out that this law is on the books, you know, and to let people know and to let, you know, so patients can be safe. And a couple of years ago, with the help of Wisconsin Normal, we got the city council to once again renew Madison's commitment to cannabis by getting Madison Medical Marijuana Week passed. We had a resolution passed, and the city council passed that with 11 votes with a couple people absent. So we were pretty proud to get that done and to get the city council on record in another decade that cannabis is something not to be ashamed of in Madison, that a lot of people use it. And it's great to live in a city like that. And another thing that... Another thing we've done, we're playing defense on Ordinance 2320 and the liberal cannabis laws, but we've also worked to play offense on state medical marijuana laws, too, and we've lobbied at the Capitol. For years, the biggest event in Madison has been the Harvest Fest, and last year we had our 35th annual Great Midwest Marijuana Harvest Festival. We had Keith Strope in, Chris Conrad, Mickey Norris, Dr. Todd Micaria, Jim Miller. It was really great. We had awesome weather. So we've been doing that for years. And last year we had a medical marijuana bill in place. So Jim Miller was in town. We were pretty creative. And we came up with a postcard campaign in the middle of Harvest Fest. We had postcards printed up. We were having people sign them the next day. And then people stayed over on Monday. We had a press conference at the Capitol with Chris and Mickey and Jim Miller and some other people. And we delivered 240 postcards to legislators that we had signed at Harvest Fest. So we made it a fun thing. People came together. We hung out and smoked pot in the library mall and listened to great bands. And Sunday we marched to the Capitol. Every year there's a parade to the state Capitol from the library mall. And as soon as they start marching, you just see a big cloud of smoke erupt from the crowd. And you're smoking joints all the way to the Capitol. And at the Capitol, too, you know, it's just an amazing thing to be part of that every year. And just the good feelings and the smiles of just marching up to there, you know. And it's great to see a lot of people get out. We don't get the huge crowds we used to. We're working on that. But there's a lot of paranoia out there. It's something you got to get it's the younger people seem to be the ones that have the courage to come out and the patience. But you know, you're all welcome to come October 6th and 7th of this year for the 36th. And I know Jim Miller will be there again, and Jackie. But that's among the things we do. And one of the things I wanted to talk a little about was creating a mission statement. And Madison Normal created a mission statement that builds on the conservative aspects. So it was to uphold Madison's long-standing community standard that the use of cannabis is not a criminal matter, to show compassion towards our seniors, disabled, and seriously ill, to support Wisconsin farmers, and to ensure the personal freedom of responsible adults. So that's something we tried to put in our mission statement as our goals in that area. So we also try to add a social aspect to our chapter, too. People who hang out together tend to work better together, and that's working real well. We're pretty new. We've only been going a couple of years, but it's pulling together. We meet at a coffee house. We have a great website. I do a blog on there, and it's amazing what you can do. You know, like we've heard, it's 20% of the people doing 80% of the work, but people come together, and it's a good thing, good way to maintain a chapter. Oh, yeah, one more thing. One great thing we did is network with other groups, and you've all heard of Jim Sensenbrenner, congressman from Wisconsin. He authored the Snitch Act recently, a couple years ago. Basically, it required parents to narc on their children and children to narc on their parents if they knew that they smoked pot, and things like that and other aspects. And I'm really fortunate in Madison to work with Ben Mazzell. He's been there for since like the second Harvest Fest, and so we were trying to get creative on what we could do to Sensenbrenner, and we put out an email, and we got a reaction from a peace activist and Greens. So we had a pretty good cross section of people there, like 18 to 80. But the Normal group decided to give Jim Sensenbrenner, we created a fake group for the day called the Madison Stalin Society. And and we created an award, the Pavlik Morozov Award. Back in Stalin's day, children were urged to narc on their parents, and Pavlik Morozov was a child, and he told the state police that his dad had hid some grain in a well, so they killed his dad, you know, so the people of the town killed him. So Stalin created an award, the Pavlik Morozov Award. So we, I got bought a Stalin medal on eBay, and we were going to give Sensenbrenner the Pavlik Morozov Award, you know. But he went in, we forced him to go in through, like, the kitchen way. We saw him walking around, too, and tried to chase him down. But also, I bought a Soviet flag on eBay, too, and Ben was being interviewed by one of the local stations, and I was holding it behind him, you know, and he was saying he's from the Madison Stalin Society to give this award to Sensenbrenner, you know. They didn't air it, but it was really great. That was one of the best events we've done, you know, because everybody got to beat up on him, you know. And so we struck a blow against Sensenbrenner. So I guess in closing, you know, Madison's a great town to work in. It's a university town. It's the state capital. There's a lot of different things to get active in there and different things you can work into. And we've managed to create a pretty good chapter and keep things going by factoring in all these things from social, political, coalition building, things like that. So.
Thank you, Gary. Thank you very much. So our fourth panelist today is somebody I'm very excited to have here because in my position as chapter coordinator for the past 3 months, I've become a huge fan of hers, and I really stand in awe of her because she is not only a strong woman, she is a strong Latina woman, something we just do not have enough of in this movement. And I'm very excited that she could be here today, so please welcome. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm going to read your bio first, Madeline.
Okay.
So Madeline has experience as a medical cannabis advocate, patient, and caregiver for over 8 years. This will be the 7th year organizing the Million Marijuana March coming up very soon. She's also retired from the Department of Corrections. I'm sure that offers some pretty interesting stories. And she is a Latina mother of 2, grandmother of 5, married for 36 years. And it's not easy doing that and being an activist at the same time and working. And she is one of 11 members of the Advisory Committee on Medical Marijuana, the statewide oversight body for the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program. So I'm very pleased to welcome Madeline Martinez from Oregon Normal.
Thank you.
Thank you all very much. And first of all, I just want to say, Karen, thank you so much, and to Normal for, you know, when I read Normal's resolution for last year to get more minorities and women involved, I went, huh, yeah, heard that before. Well, here I am. So I want to give you all an applause. Thank you so much for actually living up and, you know, not just talking the talk, but taking the walk. And Norma, wow, you are inspirational, Oklahoma. Ay, ay, ay. You know, I'm from East L.A., the Vadio, and I came from there. I went to work in a women's prison, which was very interesting, needless to say. I've been a consumer since the age of 16, which I don't recommend to children. I think you should have all your brain cells intact before you start. You know, give yourself a break. That's the rule I did with talking about a mom with my kids. If I caught it, I'm going to smoke it. You know, you're in big trouble. And you're grounded, by the way. This is good, you know, but my kids, they came up rough, you know. You got to be strong in East L.A. So anyway, long story short, I came to Oregon just to live, to change my lifestyle after I retired from the Department of Corrections with a, back injury. You know, wrestling inmates, it can get rough. But anyway, I became involved in 1998 by collecting signatures for Measure 67, which became the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act. And I'll tell you what, they told me no. I went to Kaiser Permanente, and I said, I'd like to be a medical marijuana patient. And they said, well, you don't have cancer, glaucoma, or AIDS, so you can't. And I said, no, I'm sorry. I suffer from severe chronic pain. And that was when they said, no, you can't. Six doctors later, And, you know, I talked to membership services and said, this is unacceptable. I got one of the first letters from Kaiser Permanente attorneys to qualify me for medical marijuana. And, hey, you hit them in the pocketbook, and they are not going to just blow you off. And that's what I did. And then what I did further was I looked for a group that I could, you know, recognize the name, Normal. I had always supported, and of course, Keith is one of my personal heroes, just for doing what he's done and bringing it so far into the light. I was tired of being a, closet, you know, when the kids are gone, we'll go in the room, roll up the towel by the door, smoke, and run away. Well, you know what? No more. When they said no to me, they let Jeannie out of the bottle, and it hasn't stopped since then. Well, yeah, and I got involved with what was PDX Normal a long time ago, and then we changed the name to Oregon Normal when I took over and won the election in 2001. We have, actually, with the help of Cures Not Wars, having their Million Marijuana March that year. That was their first year, and it just so happened to be the anniversary of the law that passed in 1998 by 54%. In Oregon, we became medical marijuana patients. In 1999, I got card number 500. And Willamette Week, one of our little local free throwaway newspapers, wanted to interview me. So I interviewed with them, and I was just an activist. All of a sudden, I was in the light, and guess what? Things changed. I got to go out there, and I asked at a blues fest. We have a beautiful blues fest. For those of you who aren't familiar with Portland, Oregon, go there for the blues fest. It's fabulous. I'm saying. Anyway, we're walking around, thousands of people at the waterfront, Tom McCall Waterfront Park, and I just think that I should have the right to smoke since I paid $150 for a fee to protect me and to allow me to use out of public view. So I approached the Red Cross, and I said, excuse me, because that's just how I am. Excuse me, I would like to know where I could medicate out of public view. Could you direct me? And they said, no, you'd have to talk to police. I went and I found three police officers that were walking down the road. And they said, I said, excuse me, officers, I'd like some direction from you. I'd like to know where I could medicate out of public view. Well, these three officers looked at me like I was from another planet. They said, what? They were totally confused. And I said, surely you're familiar with the law in your state, officer. And they said, oh, okay, go over here to the middle of the park where everyone else goes. That would be not here. I knew they were wrong, and so I called them on it. I called their supervisor. The supervisor said, well, you know, well, we don't agree nor support your issue. Really? Well, it's the law. You don't support the law. I'm very concerned. So then I called their supervisor, which is the mayor of the city of Portland. And she didn't want to get involved. So as this happened, what I'm trying to explain is that I got angrier and angrier. And while you don't want to show your anger and you don't want to go out there and be nasty and mean to them, you do want to stand up for your rights. And that's what I'm hoping. You know, I'm so inspired by seeing all your young faces here today because you guys are the future of marijuana law reform. Really, you know, you look around, really, you guys are beautiful, and thank you for being here, because everybody else is in a room, and you know what they're doing. But you're here, and that's what really counts, because you came even after 420 to listen. Hey, that's what it's about. No, seriously, and you know, you are the future, because you have to stand up, and you have to, as Norma said, try to mainstream. Get in there and do volunteer, and do go out there, and do push that envelope, but push it graciously. Excuse me, dry mouth. Do it graciously, be kind, be considerate, and when you do ask, ask nicely and accept no for an answer. I've seen people just go off and just go crazy because these people don't agree with you, and that's okay. We don't all have to agree, but we all have to be nice, and we leave the impression of who we are. So make sure that, and that's really important. You know, I have to take off my tie-dye and put on something when I go to the legislature. When we started in 2000 and we had the first Million Marijuana March, we had about 3,000 people at Pioneer Courthouse Square, which is in the middle of Portland. It's called our living room. And we marched down the streets of Portland with a full police escort. No dogs, no drugs, no alcohol. We insist on it. If we see a kid lighting a joint, we say, excuse me, can you put that out and we'll smoke it later. And this is not the appropriate time or place to do this. We're trying to show how many of us there are and how well-behaved we are. And you know what? Each year we march at high noon, consistently for 7 years. This is going to be our 7th Million Marijuana March. And that's the thing that I've tried to change in the movement in Portland, Oregon, and in Oregon as a whole, is that we have to be consistent. We're not just stoners. We're not just people that, don't care and don't work and aren't functional parts of society. And that's what we have to overcome and change. And so, as I say, we mainstream and we're consistent. And you know what? Two of our grand marshals have missed the march. They really have. They didn't show up at noon, and we marched anyway. One of them was pretty upset. He says, hey, you know, we're never on time. I said, Oh, yes, we are. And all of you out there that work hard, you know it. We have to go to work. We have to represent because we have to work harder. You know, I used to tell my kids this. You have to work harder, baby, because you are brown. And I'm sorry, you know, for those of you, I hope I don't offend anybody. But we do. We have to work harder. And as women, we have to work harder. Sorry, guys, but it's true. We do. We have to work harder because we don't get the same pay. We don't get the same identity. People don't look at us. They look at us differently. And that's why I'm so inspired by Normal doing this. Golly, you guys. Anyway, this is just really exciting. But I wanted to say about the other things we did was we built community. We made sure our mission statement, when I looked at Normal's name, was the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. And I looked for the action word as an old educational aide. I thought, okay, what's the action word here? Reform. What does reform mean? To affect change. Well, guess what? Oregon Normal has affected change. We have the 7th Million Marijuana March. We created something with medical marijuana patients called the Oregon Medical Cannabis Awards, which is a strain evaluation. Patients came to me years ago and said, Madeline, you know, this stuff, Northern Lights number 5, works really good for my lower back pain, but it doesn't work for my husband's fibromyalgia. And so, this strain works for this and this strain. So we created this. It's unbelievable. We get the caregivers give us strains, and then we give it to the patient, and the patient samples it and brings it back. So we have a community. And we've made it effective. We've always proactive. We actually received a letter from George W. Bush. For those of you who I haven't showed it off to, it's going to be on the website soon. But he wrote back to us. I know it was just a machine. But the fact that Oregon Normal is on that letter with White House letterhead is so empowering to me. I cannot even tell you, even though I loathe this man, I still am amazed that somebody let it come through the White House. I mean, I'm in awe. It's silly. I know. I'm giddy about it. But anyway, it's really inspirational to me. And what I want to say to you guys is make people feel like they belong, because in case you don't know, I know you do, we're lepers. We have to go hide. You know, we have to put the towel by the door. This hotel is a beautiful place, but you got to be in the room where you can smoke. So we have to change that, and we have to respect society. We have to build community. We have to let people know that we are acceptable. Hey, you guys, we're all beautiful. Look at us. We have a meeting now. We started Safe Access to Excess for medical marijuana patients in our state, and we have 250 people that meet at a pub that an owner allows us to be there. We have to see 2 forms of ID, and we give medicine to patients who don't have a hope. All they can do is go to the black market. But we created this community, so they come. They come every second Saturday of the month. We register them to vote. We get letters signed. We changed Wu's mind in our state. We changed David Wu's mind about not supporting. He wasn't going to support. There was legislation at the federal level to defund the DEA. And he said, no, no, no. But we called him. Our own Russ Belleville right here, he's a great volunteer, he's our webmaster, and he had him on speed dial. Anybody who wanted to call to our meeting, they could call. And, you know, that's what you do. And then we rallied as patients, and I know all this is as patients, but Normal's bigger than that, because now we're doing Citizens for a Safer Portland, which makes, of course, marijuana offenses the lowest priority, saves money, and that's what we're doing. Now we're doing what you're talking about, where we're tapping into mainstream. I go to town hall meetings. I say, excuse me, you know, and they can't say no to me because I'm brown and it's politically incorrect, right? You remember? Yeah. So I go like that and I wear a poncho and everything, and they call on me. Really, I do. I really do. And they call on me and I say, how do you feel about medical marijuana? And they just go, can you talk to my aide? But now they answer me and they let me speak, and I get applause at the town hall meeting, and people get in line to talk to me. You know, it's just the most amazing thing. When you stand up for your rights, people recognize it. You know, pull your shoulders back, kind of like when you do dog training, shoulders back, and just stand there and be proud. And don't be ashamed of who we are, because we are stuck with that horrible stereotype of us, you know. But we can prove them wrong, and we are. We are all over the place. Look at our free states now. We chose for Oregon Normal to work on lobbying. So we didn't get our 501c3. We were a domestic nonprofit for the very reason one of my predecessor, Perry Stripling, suggested we stick with just being a nonprofit domestically so that we could work on lobbying to protect the law, to protect the OMA, and to protect the patients and to continue to implement and to make it grow, you know, and we have. Last year, Oregon Normal was so significant, oh gosh, in marijuana law reform because we changed the possession amounts at last year's legislative session. We changed it from 4 ounces, 3 ounces at the property where you're growing, 1 ounce on you, that's the most you can have. We changed the limits to 24 usable ounces of medical marijuana per patient. Right, right. More importantly, we made people that are in hospice and health care, which it could happen to any of us any day, especially as a patient, especially at 55 years old. Makes me cry. Anyway, you know, you could be in hospice, and you know what? Now they can be medicated. It's codified in the law that someone, the same person that gives out their medicines, can now medicate that person. Isn't it amazing? Who would have ever thought this? I just, in my whole life, would have never thought it. But, and I mean, there's just so many great things in that law. It did. The law enforcement was trying to take away our affirmative defense. The defense to say if you had more than 7 plants, which is our law, that they could take your garden, take you to jail, and you could put on an affirmative defense for $65,000 after you went to jail, if you had that amount of money. Lucky you. But we knew they were coming after it. They tried it twice, and we deflected bad legislation in 2003, House Bill 2939, which was going to change our law, actually set the hoops on fire that you have to jump through to become a patient. But we changed that. We deflected it. We gave up the affirmative defense, but we got all these extra things that we felt we could work with. There still needs to be some more work. We have already submitted legislative language for 2007, which should improve our law. If anybody wants to ask me, I feel like I'm taking up way too much time here. Oh, okay, because I have so much to say. We have done a lot. You know, and the interesting part of Senate Bill 1085 is that so many people were opposed to it. Every other organization in the state of Oregon opposed it, including, you know, all the big ones you can think of in Oregon, and I probably shouldn't say their names, but they did, and in spite of that, it passed. It passed unanimously through our Democratic Senate. And then, the House over there is Republican, so they really hurt us. And that's what we were so, was it, I don't know, I'm confused. The Democrats and the Republicans, I think I'm going green. I really am going to have to go there. Because actually the Green Party's asked me about running, but that's too scary for me. But I just want to encourage all of you to get involved and stay involved. And the thing that I say to everybody is, put the joint down or step away from the bong. Write a letter, send a fax, make a phone call, do something. A lot of people tell me every day, Madeline, government is so messed up. It's really awful. Government sucks. Well, you know what? You're government and I'm government. And if we don't do something about it, then we get the government we deserve. And that's why I'm so encouraged to see all your young faces here, standing here. And you know what? America's roots are hemp roots. That's what America's roots are. And we're like reselling this to everybody now. And I got to tell you, there's so much going on out there. And you guys are so much luckier than we were in the 70s and the 60s. Because we were really struggling out there just buying them little dime bags. You know, now things have changed. We have all these states that are really, really changing things. And you guys are it. Anyway, I want to thank you, Karen and Chris. You have done Normal has done such a great job of doing all this. And if you have any questions about it, I don't know if we're taking questions, are we?
Great.
Well, thank you.
Thank you so much, Madeline. And to reiterate,